A 34-year-old man has been arrested in Melbourne overnight in connection with two bodies found in a home at Mount Waverley. Victoria Police homicide team is investigating after discovering the bodies of yet-to-be-identified man and woman around 10 p.m. Monday. Detectives arrested the man at West Hall train station and say they are not looking for any other people linked to the case. They are asking anyone with information to come forward. More than 50,000 health workers in New South Wales will receive an 8.5% pay rise over the next 2 years after the state government reached a deal with the health services union. The agreement covers allied health workers, hospital cleaners, scientists, security officers, and patient transport officers. Workers will see a 4% plus Workers will see a 4% plus 0.5% superannuation increase this financial year, another 4% next year. The state's treasurer, Daniel Mulkey, says it's a major step towards improving the state's health care.
Importantly, this is an agreement the state can afford. Through our prudent budget management, but the fact that we will be modernising pay and conditions across the state means that we can afford to offer 50,000 workers real wage increases over the next 2 years, a vital step in ensuring that they keep working for New South Wales Health.
Victoria Police have released an image of a man accused of the 1974 rape of a woman in her home in inner Melbourne suburb of Fitzroy. George Karakas was charged with rape, burglary and indecent assault and granted bail, but never arrived at court. New South Wales police officers believed they had found him in Sydney's eastern suburbs in 1990, but he had fled before he could be taken into custody under a warrant. After a 2015 appeal failed to locate Karakas, police have now released a digital image projecting what he may look like today. Detective Senior Constable Ruby Roberts says the victim is now in her 80s and is still seeking justice.
The victim has spent the last 50 years with this hanging over her head. She deserves to feel safe in her home, and she deserves to know that the man who has assaulted her has been brought before the court. She's obviously still affected by the offence that occurred, but it would mean the world to her to know that he has been located and to know where he is.
A 12-month trial is underway in New South Wales to equip hospital staff with body-worn cameras. Health Minister Ryan Park says security staff at selected sites will be able to activate the cameras in response to incidents involving aggression and violence in the hospital, where there is risk of harm to staff, patients and others. He says the trial will determine how effective the cameras are at deterring and de-escalating violent incidences. A total of 15 hospitals in Sydney are part of the trial, while hospitals in Lismore and Port Macquarie are also included. Tasmania's minority Liberal government has lost the support of a crossbench MP due to its pledge to phase out greyhound racing. Carlo De Falco of the Shooters, Fishers and Farmers Party described the government's promise as a backroom deal with animal rights extremists. Premier Jeremy Rockcliffe must secure the support of at least four crossbenchers to form a majority government after last month's state election delivered a hung parliament. The crossbench is comprised of five Greens, five Independents and Mr. De Falco. The Greens and some independents have welcomed the proposed greyhound racing ban, but have not yet said who they will support. The Liberals have also ditched a plan to open 39,000 acres of native forestry for logging. The acting Palestinian ambassador to Australia, Nara Saleh, has welcomed the Prime Minister's decision to recognise a Palestinian state in September, following assurances from the Palestinian Authority, which governs the West Bank. Anthony Albanese announced on Monday that Australia would recognise a Palestinian state at the 80th session of the United Nations General Assembly. Ms. Saleh told SBS Arabic this is a significant development.
Although belated, Australia's recognition has humanitarian, political and legal implications. And despite its distance from the Middle East, Australia has significant influence internationally and can make a difference.
Israel's ambassador to Australia, Amir Maimon, has told ABC the recognition of Palestinian state will do nothing to end the war in Gaza. The Greens have renewed calls for the government to end the export of weapons parts to Israel after Prime Minister announced Australia would recognise a Palestinian state on Monday. Australia joins France, the UK and Canada in recognising Palestinian statehood at the United Nations General Assembly meeting in September, a move Anthony Albanese says important to achieve a two-state solution. Green Senator Meereen Farooqi says the move is inadequate and called on the government to end the export of military-grade steel and F-35 fighter jet parts to Israel.
Unless the Prime Minister pairs this announcement of recognising Palestine with ending the two-way arms trade and sanctioning Israel, it is nothing but an illusion and a distraction from what is happening on the ground, where Israel is killing everyone and destroying everything in Gaza.
More than 140 of the 193 United Nations member states already recognise a Palestinian state. South Australian Premier Peter Malinauskas says it's unclear how long the destructive algal bloom will persist along the state's coastline. The Federal Environment Minister Murray Watt has apologised for the government's slow response to the algal bloom, which has killed tens of thousands of marine animals since March. He also touted the government's recently announced $28 million package to support local communities jointly funded with the state government. Mr. Malinauskas tells Sky News that he is hopeful the event passes soon.
There's a significant cohort of scientists who are still of the view that the algal bloom will pass us by in the cooler months, you know, which we've probably got around about 6 or 7 weeks off left. But there is also a very real possibility that this is still around in spring and summer, and that will present a different suite of challenges, and that's what we're preparing for as a government. We're preparing for the worst and hoping for the best.
A proposed nationwide recycling scheme could see things like two-minute noodles, chocolate bars and breakfast cereals cost more at the supermarket. Australia's competition regulator has signalled plans to approve the establishment of a voluntary industry-led scheme to collect and recycle soft plastic packaging from consumers. The new operation, if approved, will be funded through a soft packaging levy that will be passed on to consumers. The scheme replaces REDcycle, which collapsed in 2022, with an estimated 11,000 tonnes of soft plastic dispersed across dozens of depots. And now, in sport, Fremantle midfielder Nat Fyfe will retire at the end of the season. The midfielder will finish up after 16 seasons in the league, all of them with Fremantle, and will leave as one of the Perth club's most decorated players. He's won the game's most prestigious individual honour, the Brownlow Medal, twice in 2015 and 2019. He's been on the All-Australian team three times and has been voted Fremantle's Player of the Year three times. The 33-year-old says he's been weighing up retirement with his family and the club's coaches for the last 12 months. FA Cup winners Crystal Palace have won the Community Shield after beating Premier League champions Liverpool overnight. It was a crowd-pleasing match at Wembley Stadium, the sides drawing 2-2 after extra time, with Crystal Palace winning 3-2 on penalty shootouts. Substitute Justin Devaney kicked the winning point after Mohamed Salah, Alex McAllister and Harvey Elliott missed for the Reds. The Liverpool manager, Arne Slot, said the team needs to firm up its defence after admitting he had expected a win.
And in my opinion, we controlled the game till the moment they scored the 2-2. And then all of a sudden, although we still had one big chance for Mo Salah, but we could have lost it in the end as well. Till that moment of the 2-1, I think there was every reason for me to expect that we would win this game.
And for a look at today's weather, Perth is partly cloudy at 31. Adelaide is seeing a shower or two, getting sunny at 17. Melbourne's showers at 16. Hobart, shower or two at 15. Canberra, morning frost, mostly sunny at 16. Wollongong is a possible shower at 17, Sydney, possible showers at 18, Newcastle, a shower or two at 18, Brisbane is partly cloudy at 22, Cairns is a shower or two at 27, Darwin is sunny at 32. And that wraps up the news, sport and weather for today. You're listening to NITV Radio. The National Indigenous Tennis Carnival is in its sixth year, bringing more than 160 young players to Larrakia Country in Darwin. The program aims to uncover the next young stars of Indigenous tennis, with competition combined with a range of cultural activities off the court. For New South Wales representative Isaac Elson, this is his fourth and final year at the event, culminating in him being awarded the Yvonne Goolagong Crawley Medal of Excellence. He spoke to NITV about the award.
I don't know, I don't have words to say, it's just an awesome feeling. I've worked very hard and I really appreciate Yvonne, Roger and everyone who's just helped me along this way, this path, and have kind of guided me to the positive side of everything.
A new study suggests using social media can cause crucial brain activity levels to slump within minutes. It found a significant drop-off in cognition, emotion and focus after scrolling sessions. But experts warn more research is needed on the impact of screen time. Scrolling social media is a guilty pleasure that can quickly spiral into distraction, and people are certainly becoming more aware of it.
Definitely scrolling Instagram way too frequently, way more than I need to. It's in the back of my mind, but I'm not super conscious about it.
You just lose focus for even a second, you know, you just go in there, just like a doom scroll, you know, you start doom scrolling for like an hour or something. So you just feel unproductive after that, that's it.
It's a new age challenge with an impact that is yet to be fully understood. Dr. Alexandra Gillard of Swinburne University says her new research sought to explore the effects of screen time on the brain.
The main takeaway is that our research really showed that time spent on social media may be a waste of resources for the brain and can lead to decreased focus and increases in stress.
The research has found 18 to 25-year-olds exposed to phone screens for just 3 minutes experience changes in mood, energy, tension, focus, and happiness. The pilot study of 27 people compared responses to gaming, television, and social media on these devices. Dr. Gillard said this tracked brain activity by using small electrodes to track oxygen levels.
And with social media, there was the biggest increase in blood flow to those regions, but it doesn't actually get used.
The findings indicate even short periods of screen time can have measurable effects. But Professor Michael Dazani of Queensland University of Technology says the full impact on young people is a nuanced and evolving field of research.
We need to think about how social media may have negative impacts on young people. But when it comes to learning, we can't just have a kind of generalised view and say that social media is negative for learning, because we know that young people are actually using it to learn.
From December the 10th, a federal government ban on under 16s accessing social media takes effect. Associate Professor Suzanne Schweizer of UNSW Sydney says it's important efforts continue to better understand the impact of social media.
Because young people spend so much time interacting online, we need to know, does it actually influence their brain development? And if so, again, how? So those are the reasons why I think it's really important that we invest more in experimental research in this space.
That story brought to you by Tom Stainer for SBS News and produced by Nairi Pakai for NITV Radio. You're listening to NITV Radio. Today, we're joined by Anangu artist Elizabeth Close, here to talk about Taru Taru, the Ghana Skink, a 27-metre installation, joining Fuse Festival 2025. Thanks for joining us today, Elizabeth.
Thank you for having me.
Can you give us an introduction? Who are you? Who's your mum? Where are you from? What do you do?
My name is Elizabeth Yanyi Close. I'm a Pitjantjatjara Yankunjatjara woman, so from APY land in Central Australia. And I'm an Aboriginal visual artist. I have a studio practice. I have a large scale public art practice and a digital art practice. And I've been a practicing artist for about 20 years. And yeah, that's me.
Your work, Taru Taru, the Ghana Skink, it's joining Fuse Festival for Spring 2025. Can you share with the audience, what is this installation artwork?
Yeah, so Taru Taru is the culmination of, the first iteration of this artwork. This happened, it's got to be sort of 2023, I think, when this work was first created for a festival called Illuminate in Adelaide. I live on beautiful unceded Ghana country down here in South Australia in Adelaide, and I was approached by Zoos SA and Illuminate Adelaide to work with an organisation called Blank Canvas to create artwork to cover this 27-metre sort of inflatable animatronic skink to tell the story. It was a collaboration with Jack Buckskin, who is a senior Ghana man and cultural custodian, to tell the story of Taru Taru, the Ghana Skink, and to create the artwork as a collaborative piece, as a sort of a major part of this exhibition, as part of through the zoo called Light Creatures, where there was a number of these large installations that you could walk through the zoo at night in the middle of winter that had sort of projections and stuff, but it was all throughout the city as well. But Light Creatures was this wonderful sort of standalone project within it. And so Taru Taru was then taken outside of Light Creatures, and as were sort of a number of these other installations as well. But Taru Taru is very special as a standalone work. And now it's joining Fuse Festival. And so, for audiences in Melbourne, that's, where you're going to be able to see the work.
For this work, it's said to be a reflection of connection to country that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people have. What is the story of the Ghana Skink?
Yeah, I was really fortunate to be able to work with Jack. And, I'm fortunate, to be able to work with on Ghana country and to have strong ties to the Ghana community and be able to collaborate. And so I worked with Jack, he came with the storytelling and the narrative, and I brought the visual language to kind of help tell that story as well. And so Taratu is the Ghana word for skink. And in through Ghana storytelling, it says that, in the beginning there was only man, and the country was passed down from father to son, but that wasn't sustainable. So the skink, Taratu, who was the creator of ancestors, he arrived and he cut man in half with his tail, so creating man's equal, woman. And so woman followed her husband because he was the one that knew how to live on the land. And she developed her own culture. But with woman came sort of different laws and different responsibilities of sort of overseeing culture and sort of governing ceremonies. And so while man and woman's world were separate, they very much worked harmoniously together as two halves of one whole and sort of honouring their different roles and sort of sharing the load. And so one of the sort of central tenets of this work was this sort of line, this line that sort of wove its way through and across and, through the centre of the head of the skink and then down and across, sort of meandering down right through to the tip of the tail, that sort of denoted that sort of concept of that the two halves, the duality, man and woman, earth and some water, sort of elemental duality is a concept, but, you know, coming back to that tale of duality that is sort of man and woman, that's the story of Daru Daru. And so, and then, you know, bringing it together as well, other, you know, reflections of country and the way that I talk about acknowledging country and reflections of countries, reflecting landscape through palette and other elements that I use to talk about country through the work.
This installation, it's massive at 27 metres. It's also a light work with technicians. You had a crew of three for installing, a supervisor and a lighting technician. And this work is also a collaboration with Jack Buckskin. How has the collaboration process been significant for this artwork?
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, I don't know. Massive is an understatement. Yeah, the installation was. It was massive. And I mean, like, a crew, yeah, it was a crew of three for installation. And then, well, I mean, actually, it was probably more. And then, lighting technician. I mean, there was in the beginning, obviously, there was the collaboration with Jack for the narrative. But then, you know, there's the entire crew. This was a blank canvas. So, this is Joe Blank, like, his baby, who, you know, brought me on board, lead visual artist on the project. They were based in Melbourne, and this sort of happened, you know, right at the sort of thick of COVID. So I couldn't go to Melbourne to be part of the actual sort of fabrication of the skink itself. And so there were other people on the ground, you know, building it. So it wasn't like, so in addition to the installation team, there were like a team of six building the skink itself. So the collaboration on the artwork, the design development, the collaboration on creating the mock-up, the digital mock-ups of how the design's going to sit on it, the collaboration on the narrative and how my artwork is going to fit the narrative. So that collaboration between me and Jack, and then the installation and, you know, making sure that we can realise this, how are we going to make this artwork sing and do testament to this artwork and this entire process. I mean, yeah, and look, I am firmly of the belief that collaboration is so critically important. I mean, I think collaboration is something that we as Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people do incredibly well. I think it's something that's innate to our culture and us as people. But I think it's so critical, and it has been for me as an artist, because I've got so many different arms to my practice. You know, when I started out, my career grew so organically. You know, I'm self-taught. But then, you know, I think about what I've done. You know, I started out, you know, with a modest studio practice, you know, just painting canvases and things like that. And then had my children. We moved back to country to the APY. We were living in Armada for a while, and then ended up coming back. And then I had the opportunity to do street art, and then got the bug for that because I love increasing the visibility of art and culture on the public space. But, you know, I kind of had to learn how to do that, and started off with small walls, but then, you know, had the opportunity to do, like, do you want to do a 6-story wall or a 9-story wall? But then the way that I learned to do that was by collaborating with artists that could, and, you know, learning how to use big machinery by shadowing artists and being mentored by artists that could. And so that's what, you know, so it's through collaboration that real magic happens. You learn from other artists, and you learn from the people around you. And then I pass that on, you know. So, the biggest work that I've done is a 9-story piece of artwork in Melbourne, and brought on board a Wurundjeri artist, you know, to mentor her, and she's now going on to do big things like that. I've done a collaborative work with a bronze smith called Clancy Warner, and we did these bronze dingoes, Kupapa Chukupa, which is installed down here on Kaurna country as well. And I don't know how to do a bronze, I don't know how to make a bronze dingo, but it's, you know, this wonderful thing that I can, that sits in my artist sort of artist CV, because, you know, through collaboration comes real magic. And so I project, and this artwork, it just wouldn't have happened without collaboration. And so the collaboration is, I think, one of the most critical things that you can do as an artist. And, you know, there's that saying, you know, no man is an island, and nothing could be truer for an artist. Yeah, if you cloister yourself away as an artist, then, you know, you're doing yourself a disservice.
It sounds like Thorotaru is community and collaborative based, not just in it being made, but also when it's being shown too.
Absolutely. It's people engage with the work. Obviously, it was installed initially as part of Light Creatures in the Adelaide Zoo. So obviously, the target audience as such, although Illuminate Adelaide draws in hundreds of thousands of people each year. And obviously for the Light Creatures in particular, it was that the target audience was families and children. But it was certainly not limited to that. But it was such an engaging piece of work that, you could interact with the work as well. It very much became a piece of the community and people really engaged with it as though it was. And people talked about it. And, you know, even now, you know, people are trying to place me in a context because I've done so much work around Adelaide. You know, I could say, you know, I can point to a particular piece of work or whatever. They're asking me about, oh, have you painted something I would know? You know, that's one of the things. Oh, you know, did you take your kids to Light Creatures? And they're like, yeah. And I did the giant skink. And they're like, oh, my God, yes, I know about that one. So, yeah, it is. It's in that sort of community kind of zeitgeist, I suppose.
And with the skink, obviously it's been part of Adelaide, but now it's joining Fuse with Darebin Arts for this spring festival. What do you hope that Melbourne audiences will get when they experience it?
That's a really good question. So obviously, but it's what I guess I hope for it is that not only do audiences in Melbourne enjoy, you know, because it has such a beautiful aesthetic. It's so imposing. It's so big. It's so vivid and it just captures you. It's quite majestic and awe-inspiring to see. And it has a beautiful soundscape that goes with it. But it's also got a wonderful and compelling narrative that goes with it. And so the thing that I love most about Thorotaru going, across the country is that it's taking that story with it. And so audiences in Melbourne, families in Melbourne who might not know a lot about other language groups, particularly, you know, other language groups. Think about other language groups that are, you know, maybe a little bit more prominent, like, you know, Pepli in Darwin, places where they might be cognizant of where Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people are, where they practice their art, where it's, you know, in the sort of public consciousness. But don't sort of maybe think about, you know, other sort of places, capital cities and what people in sort of places like Adelaide practice culture and what stories there are. What it does is that, you know, it's increasing the visibility of other language groups and other creation stories. And so, obviously it's this very beautiful piece of artwork that draws you in. It forces the narrative into your consciousness. And so that's what I'm hoping. What I'm hoping that audiences get from that experience.
And for audiences who are keen to see Thorotaru, the Ghana skink, for Fuse Spring 2025, where can they find more information about the skink or even about you and your art practice?
They can find me on social media. I'm on Facebook, Elizabeth Close Arts. I'm on Instagram at Elizabeth Close Arts. I've got a website, elizabethclosearts.com.
I want to say thanks for sharing with us today, Elizabeth.
No worries. Thank you so much for having me. And I hope that audiences in Melbourne get to after the Ghana skink and really enjoy Fuse Spring 2025.
That was Elizabeth Close, contemporary Aboriginal visual artist. You can experience the installation Thorotaru, the Ghana skink at Fuse Spring 2025 from the 31st of August to the 14th of September. To find out more about Fuse, you can find it at the Darebin Arts website for festival programming or for anything else, all things Fuse. You're listening to NITV Radio. Yama, you're listening to NITV Radio. Today we have a performer whose acting, a musician from Tamworth who's made waves last year, taken on the role of George Washington in Hamilton, and now joining in a new production once on this island. Thanks for joining us and chatting with us today, Guri.
Well, I'm good to be here.
Can you introduce yourself? Who's your mob? Where are you from? What do you do?
My name is Gurawan Knox. I am Arunta Kavilaroy Bigamble, and so that would just mean my mom is Arunta and my dad is Kamilaroy with like roots in the Bigamble people. Born in Tamworth, 1993, and that's like the where I'm from.
You're an actor and you've had this huge role in Hamilton. How has your journey been from wanting to get into performing to now taking on these big roles in things like Hamilton and now Once on This Island?
I mean, I can't say it's been smooth sailing. It's been a ride, that's for sure. It's been rewarding. It's been unrewarding, but I've grown a lot, and the journey has been an interesting one. I've enjoyed the ride, though.
And you're not the only one who's like kind of a performer, right? Because you also have a lot of family that have been performing, musicians, and doing country music. How has that informed the way that you come to the stage?
I think what that does is that I come to the stage with more of a, I guess, with the ear of a musician first. The performative stuff, that's always kind of been in my nature, and I get it from my grandmother. My grandfather was a musician. My grandmother was also a musician, but she was an incredible stage performer at the same time, musically. Yeah, I guess what I mean to say is that I don't just come in as a trained music theatre person. I come in as a feeling musician first, and then take all the extra stuff on top of that with it being more fundamental to who I am, if that makes sense.
So you're going to be in this upcoming production, which is Once on This Island, and it's described to having Indigenous Australian influences on the play, as well as Maori and Filipino. How has this production embedding a lot of cultural elements really elevated it?
It's I had this interesting moment when I was on the stage there. We're just kind of like going through check rehearsals and stuff. We're all in our costumes and I'm looking around and I'm seeing these contemporized versions of the costumes that each person's heritage might have worn. And I had this full moment of like, man, these are like heritages and cultural like backgrounds interacting with each other. I think it's awesome in the sense of we've got all these different black cultures talking to each other and using that as a catalyst to do this show. I think it's really mad, you know?
So this show is by Curveball Creative. It's a musical, Once on This Island. Can you tell us a little bit, what is this show? What is it about?
That's kind of like a blackfella's retelling of the Little Mermaid story. Yeah, that's kind of what it is, really. Same idea of a young woman kind of falling in love with a high-class person and realise maybe it can't be, but love prevails in the end, which is really nice. Yeah, it's a ethnic retelling, I suppose, you could say it like that.
And what role do you take on in this?
I take on the role of Agwe, god of water.
That's a cool role.
Yeah, it's all right. Just casually be God, all that.
So for people who are coming to see Once on This Island, what's something that you think will really interest audiences to come and watch the show?
It's hard to say without spoiling it. Let me try and put it in a way that's interesting. All right, there are a few moments throughout where you see all of the cultures dancing together in their own style. And I don't know if Hayes Theatre has had something like that before. It's quite an intimate venue, so to see all these black fellas cooing at each other, it's a very cool experience. I think it'd be something for everyone to come and just feel that.
And for people who are really interested in coming to see this, where should they go to find more information?
I guess you could go to, on Instagram, Curveball Creative is a place that you could most likely find the information. Or Hayes Theatre Company is another place to look.
I want to thank you for jumping on and having a yarn with us today. That was Guri Knox, actor and musician in upcoming musical Once on This Island. Anyone looking for information and ticketing, they can find it on the Hayes Theatre Company website. It goes from the 2nd of August to the 31st. You're listening to NITV Radio.